Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today.
Happy Friday and Happy New Year. Today is the first day of 2021 after a year that will really be one for the record books. And today on Momentum Magnet, we're here to give you a little inspiration, a dose of reality, and a few tips and tips and tricks from our year to help you plan yours. I'm host Karen Morales, founder of Marketing Magnet and the host of this podcast. And I love to be able to reach out to this audience and give you some of the things that have helped me transform my life and the lives of the businesses we support over the last 3 years. So the first place I always start when a new year dawns is by looking backwards. And I do that in a few ways. Every company that I work with, I usually start with one question. And that question is really as simple as, what is that dream that you're trying to create? That big reality that would light you up inside. And the thing is that I've found with every organization, whether you're a billion-dollar company or a startup from a living room, is most businesses can't answer that simple question of what it is in a sentence as short as a tweet that they're trying to accomplish. And if you think about that idea, I think most people struggle with that notion too. Who do you want to be? What is that legacy that you plan to live? And most simply, what are those goals that you need to achieve to feel like you've gotten there? So that's the exercise I always undertake when I'm starting a new year, launching our partnership with a new client, or thinking about my life personally. And when I did that for 2020, I started with some of the wins. What were those things that we accomplished that felt great, that we're proud of? And I always make sure I look at that lens, not only through just my business, but also my personal life. Because I don't really think you can be the CEO, the president, the head of sales, without also being a human. And if 2020 taught us nothing more than that, it was that all of the people in our professional lives are humans too. For me, I think that was one of the most powerful lessons in this last year, of seeing small children interrupt Zooms, of listening to people have to put you on hold because a package was getting delivered or something was happening in their house that needed a small pause. I loved taking meetings while people were walking, Pelotoning, jogging, or fresh, sweaty off of that Zoom yoga class. I think being able to be a little bit more forthright about the things that we balance, about the choices that we make, and the people that circle our lives was a very human and beautiful part of the last year. So while all of that happened, we saw a lot of growth. And I have to celebrate so many companies that we worked with that were able to pivot so quickly, so directly, to become very successful enterprises. And I think that really is the case with crisis, with change. If I look back at any of the hardest years of my life where the fabric of my being was shaken by medical diagnosis and family trauma and ending relationships and financial stress. It was only because I was at an emergency point that I was able to so dramatically change my life. I think the same is true for businesses in 2020. It was a time for change. And yes, while many, many, many organizations have unfortunately suffered catastrophic losses, at the same time, in some ways, some of those businesses were not solvent from the beginning. The most important thing when you're running a business is to make sure that it is profitable. Whether you're a nonprofit or a for-profit entity, you have to be able to raise the capital to support your endeavors. We work at Marketing Magnet with companies of all sizes, multi-million dollar organizations, startups, and even nonprofits. And all of those entities must be able to support themselves through the downturns and the growth cycles. So coming out of 2020, I really see a change in the way that most businesses will have to work in this world. I don't believe that there will really be any businesses that don't have some semblance of an online presence. Brick and mortar only, probably not the wave of the future. And businesses that were only receiving business because they were being trafficked by people in very close proximity also might struggle, especially if they're surrounding the office parks, because the corporate real estate market and the move to humanity in those white collar jobs, wanting the ability to work from anywhere, will probably remain part of our society for years to come. But the stories that make me proudest are not only the ones of the organizations that truly pivoted, that changed how they did business, but they're the ones that really gave back. This year, well, I guess last year now, I think it landed on me and made us feel as an organization that there was never a stronger time when we had to contribute to society. Whether that was paying our employees that couldn't come to work, whether that was helping feed people in the local communities, whether it was giving to nonprofits or even helping struggling families have a happy holiday season, it became a driving motto. But there were many, many companies across this country. I would say Amazon is one of them, where their profits did not outpace giving back. The delivery workers during this pandemic, the people bringing our packages, delivering our mail, putting our groceries on our front steps, stocking the grocery shelves, and working in those front lines to deliver the essentials to the American public, alongside the teachers and the healthcare heroes, they're really the ones we depended on. And it did feel that in many cases, a lot of those people were forgotten. So as I reflect back on 2020, I think all of us can be proud of some of those wins we had in our life and business. We can collectively understand that the way this society works, the way we go to work, and the way we interact with businesses is fundamentally changed. We're even more of a virtual society now than we were in the past. And I think that will continue into our future. And as I think back on 2020, and I'm proud of the successes that we had, and I've witnessed so many other businesses doing the same, we really do have a moral obligation to help others. There was so much divisiveness in this nation in 2020. So much strife, so much infighting. To me, it almost felt like you had a really negative set of in-laws coming back and forth, and just nobody could get along. It was like you were at a crazy dinner party with your drunk aunt and your angry uncle and that one sister that nobody really likes. And no matter what you tried to do or how bad the family situation got and the need for people to come together, everybody just preferred to argue. I don't know if that is necessarily going to change overnight as we head into this next year. I'm always hopeful. But I do think that each of us has the opportunity to be part of that ripple effect to something bigger, something stronger, and something more collaborative. So today, as you frame the new year, I wanted to give you a few steps that I take all of my business clients through and that I also do in my personal life. We talked a little bit about that exercise of writing down the things that really went well, the things that you did that you were proud of. I mean, maybe that it's you finished Netflix. That's fine. You baked the perfect bread loaf. You didn't get fired. You paid your mortgage on time. Whatever that is, write it down. When you're done celebrating your wins, then I think it's time to think about that list of what didn't work out so well. The things that you hope and that you wish will improve for the year to come. On my business wins this year, it was redefining my team structure and actually having office hours with my assistant. It was the single most effective thing that I did this calendar year, and we only landed on it in Q4. By setting 3 hours a day when we knew we could always reach each other, it made our communication so much more impactful and efficient. And it stopped a lot of those silly back and forth conversations and streamlined them because I would wait to send the information or lob the request until the office hours that we both determined. That was a huge win. On the personal side, I think being home more enabled me to be more present with my children and especially more involved in their schoolwork. If we hadn't had Corona, homeschooling, and the drama of a changing educational system, I would not have known that my 11-year-old was severely dyslexic. By witnessing him in his schoolwork a few weeks in the spring, I immediately knew. And because of being home more and more present, this brilliant child is finally getting the help that he needed and probably should have had for years. So those are my personal wins. When I think about the things that didn't go so well, I would say on the business side, last year for me was about restructuring. It was about putting a different team in place and operationalizing how we worked together. I would say that I probably waited too long to add more structure to my business. And I wasn't as consistent with that routine and that structure as I could have been. earlier on in my business trajectory. So that was hard. But at the same time, we really focused on profitability and cash flow last year. And a lot of times for new businesses, that is the place that you need to be in order to really see the growth. So many of us think about top line revenue as the number to focus on. But this year, it felt great to ensure that we were debt free, that we had cash reserves, and that we were really optimizing every single dollar into the business. On the personal side, I think consistency is the theme too on things that maybe didn't go so well. It was crash or burn for me with exercise and nutrition. I started March strong, like most of you, killing that Peloton and really feeling like I was crushing personal records. And then I broke both my feet in May. I mean, really, let's take a global pandemic and, render yourself immobile while you already are battling some physical challenges with a rare medical diagnosis. I mean, truly, truly not optimal. But you know what? I did recover. I got back on those 2 feet. I started walking around the house and I was back to exercising. But sometimes the comeback is hard, right? It's easy to, think, oh, I'm up and that's enough. But really, it isn't. Consistency in diet and exercise was something for me that was not there in 2020. And it's where I need to focus this year. If last year was about business stability, this year is about personal stability, health and self-care and routine. If you want a look into how 2020 was maybe different for you than the year before, you can check your Fitbit or your Apple Watch. For me, I just used the little health app on my iPhone and I found the, my steps were so dramatically down in 2020 that this year I'm making a concerted effort to definitely move more. So those are really the exercises that I go through when I'm trying to plan. And when I come out of 2021, I know that for me this year is about consistency. It is a focused growth strategy for my business where we are reaching out to larger brands and helping them transform their marketing spending by giving them that second opinion, bringing new brand platforms to life, and helping them operationalize them across channels. We did that for a variety of businesses this year, and we look forward to expanding into that sector in 2021. Personally, I'm going to be in much better shape at the end of 2021. There's no more excuses. We don't know how long this pandemic is going to last. We don't know how long we're going to be sheltering in place. In fact, I'm home today in my home office because I had a potential exposure last week, even though we are not hardly seeing anyone. So we never know what's going to happen. We're trying to keep ourselves healthy. And while we're home, we need to focus on moving our bodies and keeping strong. So for today's episode, I really wanted to share some of my best lessons learned, what I do to prepare for a new year, and how I think about the year to come. Sometimes our best laid plans get sidetracked because in the setup for this episode, I was having a very interesting conversation with my beloved sound engineer. And as Doug and I were going back and forth about what our forecasts are for the year to come, he gave me a different perspective. He challenged my thinking about whether this really is the new dawn people were crossing their fingers for, or whether we're still in the midst of a pretty hard and long period to come. I like getting other people's opinions, and I like talking about the news and the forecast to as many different thought leaders as possible. So today we're doing something different, and I'm inviting Doug Newsom to join us to talk to us about how he feels the next years will impact our history, the role of communications in this time at home, and what we could all do to spread a little more joy and humanity in society. So welcome, Doug, the man with the best radio voice we've ever heard.
Oh, you are so kind. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome. And although Doug is in California and his last name is Newsom, he is not a relative of the governor. We have to just put that out there. So none of these opinions are actually coming out of the California state government. So there's no, legal challenges here. Is that fair to say?
You're absolutely right. There might be some relation way back where, but the last name is unique without the E. There's Newsoms with the E and there's Newsoms without the E. It means new psalm or we are. I think it came from new psalm du Eric, meaning we are of Eric the Red at some point back in our history.
Beautiful. So you have been working in radio for years. Tell us a little bit about your journey and where you've been over the course of your professional career.
Oh my gosh. Where would I begin with that? It's almost overwhelming, Karen. I rarely speak about it because it's so crazy and fantastic. When I was a boy, I grew up on the second biggest ranch in Canada. And my dad was trying to put together a sawmill to timber off the northern part of British Columbia. We actually leased about 1.5 million more acres than our five ranches. And the government, NDP, came in and said, you can't timber off the land. And we went broke. So broke, I can remember, it was such a terrible period of time. Lived in squalor until about my teenage years. And then I got into business at a very young age, about 15. I was a couple years younger, almost a couple years younger than most kids in school because, we skipped grade two. And then we transferred from Canada to the U.S. The education system was ahead, so I kind of skipped again. So I was always younger than most of the kids in my class, well, everybody in the school, and started my senior year about 15 years old into business with my dad, finance, and we funded dozens of companies. So I was moving literally by the time I was 16, 17, millions of dollars a day on public exchanges. I worked with 40 brokerage firms, desk traders from one end of the continent to the other, and grew up in that kind of a lifestyle when you had big mutual funds and being born. And I learned, the nature of business, and it's a nasty business, by the way. Boiler rooms, you've seen the movie Wall Street, well, I lived that world. And then the Canadian market crashed, and I was about 20 years old. This is a big market crash before 1929. It was 1987, I believe. I can't remember specifically. And the market went belly up. And interestingly enough, a lot of people knew that the market would go belly up prior to it. I know because I was offered, my family was offered to short everything that on a specific day when that was going to occur, and it did occur. And that caused enormous pain. I can remember my father flying off to Europe because he wanted to pick up a mining property in Czechoslovakia that we were financing 1 week later on the exchange for millions. And the market crashed, and I, in my ignorance, my youth, 19 years old, I got called by everybody around the globe, and the markets were crashing from dollar levels to penny levels, and I was an idiot. I stepped in, and I bought millions of dollars worth of stock on credit to buy everybody out on the way down. So I literally put our family into a pickle. And that led to... it's just such a wild story. Investigations, 30 brokers were indicted. Everybody in my family was indicted. I was indicted because I actually was, I bought and sold my own stock to myself. When you're millions and millions and millions of dollars in debt, you have to trade your way out of it, right? So I kept on telling brokerage firms, here's $250,000 shares or here's 50,000 shares. Just buy and sell it, but try to get me, you know, back to even. And, you know, when you're dealing with so many different accounts, you give brokers the ability to buy and sell at their leisure. And so one broker would be selling and another would be buying. And I happened to buy and sell my own stock 3 times. Well, that is fraud, of course. Market manipulation, you could call it a million other things. And that led to half a decade of investigations and fighting and the constant harassment. And during that time, I worked with, you know, right after that market event, and it still hadn't been settled. I worked with some of the biggest names in the world, you know, David Kay of K-Pro Computers, the first computer company, you know, the people who founded HBO were approaching me, Snapple's baby, even Michael Jackson came to us. When he put out the record Bad, he wanted to save $3 million or $4 million on his taxes because he wanted to create a company called Joe Cola. Smart Tech Software, which was a computer company which David wanted to create. Oil companies, mining companies, trucking companies, cosmetic companies. The self-chilling pop can idea that came out of California. I mean, we were approached by everybody, and we worked with a lot of individuals, and they were bad people. Bottom line, bad. And every time I built a company and I raised millions for them, at the end of the day, the Canadian situation would come back, and they would literally, I can remember building American Energy, raised millions. They were worth, I don't know, close to $1 billion at one point. And I thought, bah, we did it. We raised them all this money. We built this company, and we're going to get our payday. And I can remember being walked in, thinking I was going to get paid, and lawyers across from me saying, "Well, we're going to screw you out of everything, and there's nothing you can do about it." And that's absolutely the case because I was still going through the Canadian situation, which hadn't been resolved. So every time I built a company and spent my life, working, doing the financial paperwork, building the prospectus, the business plan, taking them public. Didn't matter. I just literally did it all from A to Z with my brother and my father. And they still screwed us out of the deal. And that just happened time and time and time again. So, and I was the guy who raised all the money. You've heard of Ivan Boesky, the junk bond king. Well, I worked with his assistant. People like that. And
you did this as
a boy.
A boy.
I mean, and I kept on doing it.
When you're talking about fraud or investigation, I mean, most kids at that age are thinking about how to ask somebody out on a date or how they're going to, get to the football game. So these are really weighty
decisions. It hurt my family. Yeah. I went through 20 years of nightmare, a 20-year nightmare. And I should have, I could have retired every time I built a company. Those companies are still alive today. Those people made enormous amounts of money. But we never made anything. The last company I built with my brother, we ranged about $9 million, $6 million in seed. Imagine, $6 million of seed funding. Did all the paperwork to take them public, the whole nine, and brought two big deals to the table. And they didn't know how to handle those deals. And they ended up owing some very powerful people money. And those people just squashed the company, and I had to bring in other people to buy out the company, and I ended up losing, and so did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shareholders. So over 20 years, I probably lost tens of thousands of people everything that they had. You can imagine trying to live with that, right? And even though the shareholders always lost, the companies always did great. The insiders, they always did great. And that made me change. I can remember thinking, I was so blue, I was so depressed. I got, my life needs to change, and I need to figure this out. So I can remember my parents were both terminally ill at the time, and everything was going wrong. We just got screwed out of $33 million building American Energy. And I took a little apartment in Houston, and I started to meditate just for 2 years, literally almost 2 years. And I didn't meditate normally. I meditated for like hours a day. And I can remember the reason why. I just wanted to revisit every single human being in my life, send them love, just and forgive, and just go back in my mind. What's going on here? How can I apologize? How can I forgive the world for this pain? That's because I never dated. I never had time. I never got any real money when I was a boy. Remember the big ranch? But after that, it was all a nightmare. So, but that led to something very unique for me. Back in August of 2004, I was stepping out of my shower, towel drying, literally a towel from towel drying my left shoulder to my right shoulder with a big towel, my back to the mirror, and bam, I had something that is described in books to, you know, as a kundalini, but it was massive. It was so massive. It took me into, well, it's like a golden rod going in the back of your head, down your butt, into the ground, expanding into infinity, and all you see is energy. And then you experience things. Instant knowledge, instant awareness, instant revelation of everything that you are. You become Christ conscious. You're in a period of total bliss. Too many things to describe. And then I came out of it screaming. My fingers were trying to touch the ceiling, and I was just screaming. I couldn't believe it. It was ecstasy. It was like, what just occurred? Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. It was just overwhelming. It was like, this can't, you feel so lucky, so blessed. So it's just so, I don't know how to describe it. And then for 3 months, energy floated around me, and things transpired that I don't really want to talk about because it's hard to explain and hard to believe. And almost everything is impossible to believe. It was just over, let me give you an example of things that would occur to me. One day I would know all language. I was able to understand where sound came from and the emotion that came from the vowels and why the word was created. So, and I just knew this about languages. And then maybe another day I would go through an experience where I was able to create music, where I could put layers of tracks on top of each other, 10, 15, 20, didn't matter. And it was all flowing through my head. Another day I could see objects. You know, if you were looking at two objects at once with the same intensity, it's impossible. You can't do it. You can only look at one object and look at it clearly. But two objects, but I could do that with an infinite number of objects in a 360-degree circle. Stuff like that. It was very bizarre. So it changed me. I became a third party. I began to witness myself. I began to slow my mind down, see my thoughts. I recognized the power of your mind. You're recognize the power of your thoughts to change you. You really do. Everything, you know, you tell yourself, oh, I hate life, I hate the world, or I love life. They have an impact on you, even if you're thinking them. So I became aware of that. I became aware of other people. I felt a change. And at that point, my brother and I started to build this company, which is media. We really, you know, this was right after 9/11. Everybody wanted to talk. They, you know, it was a big event. And we wanted to share our conversations with the world. You know, and it started with, you know, blogging. And then that's where BBS Radio came from. Blog in broadcasting service. And then we wanted to share our blogs with other people. We started having great conversations on the phone, and then we wanted other people to participate. And then we wanted to record it, and then we wanted, you know, to do it live. And it kind of changed that way. This was before there was any real kind of new media back in 2003. And that's how PBS birthed, just because of that 9/11 and the change in the world and trying to talk to other people about those changes. And at the same time, there was a lot of metaphysical energy. You know, there was this birthing of understanding inside my being. And that brought a lot of the metaphysical topics. So you could imagine PBS Radio became very metaphysical. You know, we dealt with the sciences, the social sciences, and not really much politics. It was just people trying to help people in some way. And that's really about what PBS Radio is about, people trying to help people.
So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, it is actually an incredible story, right? 25 years of really challenging situations, in and out of poverty to abject wealth, to criminal prosecution, to leaving your home country, to having a...
to 3 years in jail.
We missed that. 3 years in jail.
Right. I actually let it. I said, I'm going to give up. Oh, I want all the brokers off, all my family off, all my friends. Bear in mind, I employed my friends too, sending them to universities and paying for their way and different things. I tried to help everybody, even when I was young. But I wanted everybody off, and it was costing more money than you can imagine. And I finally said, okay, take me. And I'll take the rap and let everybody go. And that's what I did. So, yeah, that was...
That's a whole nother plot twist.
Right.
And then you wake up one day in 2004 and have this spiritual, emotional awakening. And from there, you and your brother reinvent yourselves to be people that are about spreading messages of change and growth and right. expansion of humanity. So talk to us a little bit about how you see the future of communications and where you see the role of podcasting and sharing of opinions go now that we're in this world where a lot of us are based at home.
Yeah, I'm like you, Karen, an eternal optimist. I believe in humanity.
I really get that now. We talked about this earlier, Doug, but I truly believe you are an optimist of the varsity level.
Yeah. And I love people, and I know that within each of us, that desire to want to have that beautiful outcome resides within us all. And so we're going to push for it. But while we're pushing for it, I think that there's elements within us that are also at contrast. You know, we don't talk a lot. I see the world divided. You know, the Republican side, the Democratic side. I see, you know, people are amassing wealth on a level they never did before and not really sharing it. I see, you know, that here's the interesting part about life. You know, people ask me, what's tomorrow going to bring? And I, in my mind, I realize it's going to bring the dynamic of more. It's going to bring always more bad and more good. It's like an expansion. You can't expand into the light forever because you won't know the value of it. It's like being born with bliss on tap. If you were born with bliss on tap, you wouldn't know the value of being on bliss. You wouldn't until I took you off of that. You could be sucking it at birth. You wouldn't know the value of it. But when I take you off of that bliss on tap, you start to learn the value of that bliss. So the world's always expanding. There's always going to be a further darkness and more light as we continue to expand. And so when I envision the future, I see that. I see how bad is going to get worse and how good is going to get even better. And so if we want to talk about the good part of it, I could give you that expansion. But if we want to talk about the bad part of it, I can give you that expansion. Like we don't want to see people make more money and poor get even poorer, but into the future, that's exactly what's going to occur. You're going to see not billionaires, but trillionaires. You're not going to, you know, people are going to be further pulled apart, where you're going to have a more dominant class and an even poorer class. I know that's crazy, but that's the future. And that's, I wish the humanity didn't have to live through that sort of an understanding, but I don't know if there's an understanding that works any better than that. It's almost like we want that to grow. We want to experience the furthest point along the line to be able to know the value of the other furthest point on the opposite direction. So into the future, I see trillionaires. I see us going out into the universe, maybe expanding. Maybe you think, oh my gosh, the world isn't going to have any more freedom. We're going to lose our freedoms. And let's say you're a liberty minded person, and you figure, oh boy, you know, the world is going to become more of a dictated to. We're going to become more like China. We're going to have rulers, and because there's just so many people, and we need that sort of dynamic. But if you take it even further out into the future, you're going to see us expanding out into the stars, where you're going to have that initial place again that might be the way you intend it to be. Like, let's say it has no more government, or it has no more laws, or it has no more rules. It's just open wide. And you're going to have that again. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, you're going to have other planets out there where people have the total control, and you're going to be totally controlled. And that's our future. It's infinite. Where's the future of America going to be? In the next few years, I see more pain. I told you that initially. I see more division. I see the Republican side looking at the Democrats as if they stole something from them and they've been cheated out of something, and they're going to not forget that. So what are they going to do? They're going to retaliate. How are they going to retaliate? By creating that same sort of situations for the Democrats. You know, as they're not going to allow them to put policy in place. They're going to create more roadblocks. There's going to create a lot of tension between the right and the left moving forward. I don't see that getting any better. I only see that getting worse. But then you're going to have opportunities and problems where we're going to have to come together. You know, for example, I see into the future the awareness of maybe alien races. Maybe that dynamic coming to play into our future, where we recognize that there are other civilizations out there, and they do exist, and that might create a dynamic where we have to come together. Or maybe asteroids or something that could have the potential of destroying humanity. You know, a galvanizing events which bring us together. And I see more of those events into the future. Galvanizing events that are going to be, you know, quite catastrophic. Because it's almost like we need those events, because our division, we're being pulled apart in so many ways that if we don't have those events that put us together, we're not going to be able to see that other side of the coin. So the more we pull apart, the more we're going to have an event that's going to pull us together, and it's going to be bigger, right? That's the future. I see humanity using and manipulating genetics in a way that creates superhuman capabilities. Better vision, better hearing, better capability of not having to breathe underwater for longer periods of time, the ability to be more physical. And that is going to, let's say you have people that are capable of that and people that are not. Well, that's going to create further division, a further separation between people. How are we going to overcome that? I'm sorry.
There are some people that, you know, you're taking a step into a future that some people can't envision, right? There's a lot of people that are mired into the moment of today.
Right.
And what they're focusing in their day-to-day lives, whether or not they're going to have enough money to pay their mortgage this month. next month, whether their job or their business will survive 2020. Or I guess now 2021. I'm not even used to saying that. So how do you balance what is a very global and expansive view into how you approach the here and the now?
Boy, that's a good one. I'm such a futurist in my mind. I think when I had that awakening, it just was so expansive. It just kind of shared with me the infinity of everything, the possibility of everything, the magic within everything. And my mind doesn't, you know, really come back to that one, you know, what's happening right now. I'm kind of everywhere else. But for me, I would like to be able to create a media conglomerate that actually brings alternative understandings to the world that isn't from the top down, but rather coming from the bottom up, sharing the information from the bottom to the world rather than being dictated from the top down. As we see all media companies today, they do this. And I think that's bad. You have a lot more gatekeepers of information today. It's being more and more controlled and more manipulated. And that saddens me because I really want to see total transparency. I mean, if we could all look at each other and see our auras, let's say you could imagine you could look at a person and know that person. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great if you could get all the information you wanted on a politician and you knew whether they were honest or whether they weren't, or they were had some nefarious things in their mind? But we don't. But we want that. We want that transparency. We almost demand it from our soul. Our soul says we need to be that open. So for me, that is where I push that transparency understanding, that willingness to engage on all subject matters. I mean, we're a network. We have BML, Black Lives Matter people. We have Republicans. We have Democrats. I mean, I don't say, oh, I don't like your opinion. You can't be on the network. I don't care what your opinion is. I do care. I'm not going to stifle it. I want you to be able to speak your mind. You know, I think of the world as like a think tank. If you had, you know, 100 people around a table all giving their point of view, you're better off than one person giving one point of view. How could you not be? You're infinitely wiser. So that's what I hope for. I hope this network can bring thousands of points of view to the table. And this is my worry about where the future of the world is going. Because you have very powerful people that they might really want the best for the world. But in order to have the best for the world, they almost want to control the world. They want to say, okay, we got to put these systems in place that allow us to dictate policy so we can keep it safer, let's say. They might have a great, noble idea in their mind, but they don't know how to create that, you know, help the world unless they can control the world in their mind, right? And so
That's really a wise statement, because I think that is the key to engendering any positive relationship, whether it's a romantic one, a parental one, a business relationship.
Right.
It is giving that autonomy and relinquishing your personal control over other people's identity.
Right.
And I think that you've really hit a nail on the head. I mean, even if we look at the entertainment system over the last 9 months, you almost see that we have six news networks and five or six newspapers driving the political agenda. And we almost now have two or three channels giving us our entertainment, you know, Amazon Prime and Netflix entertaining the nation.
Right.
And the lack of diversity in the opinions could definitely have an unfair balance of power.
Right.
Like you saw in kind of the stock market crisis that you faced as a family in Canada.
Right. Yeah, and that's the worrying factor for me, for the future of humanity. I feel, you know, whether they're very, the wealth becomes more wealthy as I, you know, and the poor become poor. It's just the nature of what's happening. And into the future,
control our future.
Right? In the future, you're going to have people that want to control us even more. And the people are going to become further and further away from being a deciding factor. It's like your vote will become less and less important, if you even have a vote. As the opposite side of the spectrum wants to control more and more of your life in order maybe to keep you safer or allow this planet maybe to become greener. Whatever is in their mind, they want to control you more, which takes away, you know, more of your voice, more of your opinion. So it's like an opposite's going to occur with the benefit. And I only see more of that into the future. How do you look at that as a... You got to look at that in two ways. You got to be excited about it and fearful of it. I guess it's two things. It's going to be good and bad, depending on how you perceive it. I just hope that the world allows for all of us to express ourselves and to have a say in our lives. And I think that's not going to be so easy moving forward. I just don't see it.
Those people that are listening right now and are feeling like they're getting that soul call and that they have a message and they have a platform that they want to share with humanity. They feel like they've got something to say and it would help this discourse. How do they reach out about getting on your network and having their voice be heard?
Oh boy, just call me. You bbsradio.com, bbsradio TV. If you're interested in having a voice and a platform, I would say we probably provide one of the best platforms there are. I mean, my brother and I, we work 110 hours a week. Trust me when I tell you 80 hours would be like so light to me. I couldn't imagine an 80-hour work week. So we work very hard, and we know what we're doing. We've been in this industry since day one. I mean, when new media started, we developed it. We know how to build it. We know, you know, the engineer it, both on the physical aspect and on the code aspect. So we don't need to spend a lot of money getting people to do what needs to be done. So we save a lot of money. Plus, we live together, we work together, we live in and work in the same space. So we don't need employees. We don't need to pay them, and we don't market. We don't have to. We've been around so long and our presence is so large, we don't have to spend any marketing dollars. So every penny that my brother and I get, we put back into the company. In fact, I think last year, the year before last, I might have taken $8,000 in salary. Last year, which was a good year, the best year we've ever had, I don't think I hit $1,500 a month. Yet I work, you know, the equivalent of three times as hard as most people do. You know, you do 40, I do 110. So I should be getting millions, but I don't. I don't take the money. I put it into the business, and so does my brother. We don't have employees. We don't need them. We don't need all these experts that cost you an arm and a leg and all these employees and all this marketing expense. So what we're capable of doing is unbelievable. We can provide all the goodies a dozen other companies do, all the big companies, we all under one roof, and we don't charge you for it. I mean, we literally have 100 things we can do for you that is just, you'd pay an arm and a leg for everything we do. So, and we're well connected. You know, my brother and I, because we've been doing it so long, we realize there's two keys to this. One is the ability to be interactive. So we can use software from any platform, whether it's analog or digital, and we can make it interactive all around the world with let's say you had a person in a studio in Egypt and another person on a rotary phone in Cambodia, and one person using Skype, and one person using Zoom, and another person using their cellular, and we can mix it all in real time and send it out to the world. I don't know of any other companies that can do that. We also really tied ourselves in with reach. Like, we're one of the only companies that actually live streams Die Hard. I mean, a lot of people podcast Die Hard, but we live stream. And we live stream to 120 networks around the globe. Live stream. That's not like, oh, I'm going to be on your Facebook or just on your YouTube. How about being everywhere? And then we podcast you to all the major corporations. So we're kind of like your live broadcaster and podcaster with all the goodies. And so we can get people's messages out there and do it at a very low price. And we don't have we don't allow you to sign any agreements. You know that. We say, if you can find a better price, better system, better service, better software anywhere in the world, you're free to go. Go. Try. We want our... I love competition.
What is your best way? Email address? Because I'm sure people are listening today and saying, you know, this was on my bucket list, was to start a show this week. How do I do it?
Email me at Doug, D-O-U-G, at bbsradio.com. Two B's, like in boy, one S, like in Sam, radio. So Doug, D-O-U-G, at bbsradio.com. We'll take care of you.
Fantastic. Well,
Karen,
I love...
Thank you. Happy New Year. You're such a wonderful, brilliant mind, soul, and I'm grateful to know you, and I thank you for your time. Truly, I do, Karen. Thank you.
And I thank you for being a partner for all of this time. So thanks, everybody. Happy 2021. And again, we are Momentum Magnet, here every Friday to bring inspirational guests so that you can make more momentum, more progress, and reach your goals in your life and business. I'm Karen Morales, host of the show and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, the marketing agency to help your business make growth and change. I thank you for listening and ask you to go to iHeartRadio and iTunes, Spotify, and all the places. Like us, give us your reviews, subscribe. It helps us get better quality guests and know what resonates with you most. Again, it was a pleasure having you this week, and I'm so excited for this journey into a new year. Happy 2021. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.